And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, sequel suckers! Funny story, I got an email a couple of years ago from Blumhouse, and they wanted me to pitch them a treatment for a sequel to that Black Phone movie. Well, I was like, that one's gonna be kinda hard to make a sequel to, but I'll give it the old college try. So here's my pitch. It's in present time. And the kid who's kidnapped is the son of the kid who is kidnapped in the original movie. Only this time, the serial killer is named the Shoplifter because he only kidnaps kids from malls. Well, he's keeping the kid in the basement, and the kid notices an old flip phone, but it doesn't have a battery in it. But then one day, it rings, and it's a little kid, and he says, "Hey, mister, do you have Prince Albert in a can?" And he says, "What the hell is Prince Albert in a can?" And the kid goes, and hangs up. And then he starts getting calls from insurance companies with names that he doesn't recognize, and sometimes somebody's asking him to take a poll, but it's about stuff that happened 20, 30 years ago. And then he says, "I want to talk to a manager." And they put him in touch with this guy named Pig Gullet, who turns out to be a demon in hell. And then Pig Gullet says, "Oh, I can't help you with anything. I'm going to send you up to the boss." And he gives him to the boss, and the kid thinks he's talking to Satan. So Satan says he'll help out the kid, but the kid will have to offer his dog Fluffy up to him as a sacrifice. And the kid says, "Okay." But then the twist at the end of the movie is it's not really Satan. It's the Grabber from the first movie. And he's just a mid-level demon. But he tricks the kid into sacrificing the dog, which opens up a gateway into our reality. End of part two. But entry right into part three. Well, I didn't hear from Blumhouse after that, and then it was just a practical joke put on by a fellow horror host, the old blind gravedigger. Real dick move by the old blind gravedigger, because 6 months after that, and he knew this, I had just got catfished by Wartnose the Witch. She does that kiddie show, Monster Movie Mondays, on WDMZ, DeMonzaville. Wait, what was I talking about?
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Vault of Starling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your hosts, Jason Jeckany, but I'm not alone on this journey. I am with Two True Freaks OG, Chris Honeywell.
I'm not possessed, you judgmental cunt wagon.
And that chuckle you heard was none other than the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler. I'm stumbling over words tonight.
That's all right. The devil's lettuce is not allowed in Camp Alpine property.
And mine was, "Fuck you with a dinosaur dick."
Yes.
Bang. That's what it is. So if you don't know what we're talking about, where you been? Anyway, so it is Black Phone 2. Yes, the sequel that no one thought could get made because, let's face it, at the end of Black Phone, fucker is dead.
Dead.
Like, he's fucking straight up dead. Like, there's no question. He's dead. But yet, they still managed to pull off a sequel that was overall well-received.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people were kind of surprised that now they were able to somehow continue the story of Finn and his sister. And to be honest, we did Black Phone on here, and Black Phone, I enjoyed Black Phone, obviously, when we first watched it, you know, kind of thing. The crazy part is that at the end of Black Phone, which that's 2021, so it's a few years ago, it pretty much is done. Like, it's finished, you know?
It didn't feel like, you know, they had any aspirations of making this into a franchise, you know? It very much felt like an adaptation of a short story, which is what it was. Yeah. So
it was well done, and I wasn't expecting a sequel, but here we are.
But it made a lot of money on a really small budget, and this is Blumhouse, you know? That's what I was going to say.
$30 million budget made $132 million at the box office. So if any time you can go and like quadruple your money, you know, kind of thing. I mean, that is a major release. So again, like I said, production was Blumhouse. Universal distributed it, so you know it's got some serious backing behind it. And your director is Scott Derrickson. Scott Derrickson is known for The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Sinister, and The Black Phone. Right?
And the first Doctor Strange, I think.
Say it again?
In the first Doctor Strange movie.
Yes, in the first, I was going to say, and from the non-horror, the first Doctor Strange, right? So, but like, The Exorcism of Emily Rose is really good. A lot of people overlook this because it's not really like a exorcist movie. It's much more about, like, mental health, and it is some devil shit in there,
too. Yeah, it's like a courtroom drama, wasn't it? More than anything else.
Yeah. Well, but it it's good. It's not that it's not good. It's just it's not the normal kind of thing. So, we may have another guest here with us tonight. Not a guest, I should say. Another member who has appeared out of the ether.
Wow.
None other than my brother, Luke Giacchinetti.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
it's going.
Yeah. Sorry. We wait for the phone call. For the phone to ring, the black phone to ring, Zach, to get you in here.
He's calling from under the ice, yeah.
He's calling from under the ice.
Yes.
The ice is going to break. That's the wrong movie, sorry.
Yes.
No, ring, ring. I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Yeah, no, the ice is going to break.
Thank you, Christopher.
Wrong king. That's the father, not the son. But... yeah, so Black Phone 2, like we said, made $132 million on a $30 million investment. So obviously, you know, they knew there was some money to be made because the original Black Phone, the 2021 release, that made about $161 million on about a $16 to $18 million budget. So, you know, I'm just saying, you know, this it didn't quite bring back the exact, you know, amount of, you know, like that's five times the amount. But I think they're pretty happy with $100 million, you know, profit off of this movie. So, and again, we were saying, the director, Scott Derrickson, you know, the Exorcism of Emily Rose, again, much more about the court case and all the stuff that goes, but it's not just straight court case. It's also about her, what happened to her in the barn and whatever. But Sinister is just brutal. As a movie, a lot of people hanging from trees and stuff like that. So if you haven't seen Sinister, you should go check that out. Because that, if you like the kind of movies we like, you probably like that. So, but I just wanted to mention this real quick. Because, you know, they got all the kind of people in here, right? You know, Ethan Hawke is back and, you know, Mason Thames and, you know, Madeline McGray, all those people, right? But what got me when I was looking through it was the music is by Atticus Derrickson. Who's got to be related to Scott Derrickson. I'm just saying.
You would think.
I'm just saying, you know.
That would seem that there's otherwise, the fact that there are two Erickson's does seem unlikely.
Yeah. I've never met anyone else named Derrickson in my entire life, and there's two on this film. It's kind of like when Charlie Band and Richard Band work together.
What?
Maybe they know each other. So, anyway. But yeah, like we said, Ethan Hawke is back as the Grabber. And we know that Ethan Hawke as the Grabber is dead at the end of the first one. But Finn, which is Mason Thames, he's the only survivor. So he's still being plagued by, you know, the stuff that all happened to him there. And now with his sister, Gwen, that's Madeline McCray. She is now getting visions through her dreams. And what it turns out is the mom had the same thing. And I was like, oh, okay. Now, I knew, kind of going into this, I already knew that this wasn't going to be a straight up, like, he survived, you know, because he didn't survive. We kind of think, right? So we kind of knew that there was going to have to be something there. And to kind of go the route they did, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
In that now there's like a whole different set of rules, right? It's now it's no longer just the physical kidnapping. He's there and there's the site, but the psychic stuff was in the first one, but now they kind of amp that up.
It's kind of like said, Jason in reverse is what sort of happened, I think.
Yeah. Well, but it's kind of got
very much
a hard
leap into the supernatural.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, but like, where else are they going to go with this? Unless Finn turns out to become the next grabber because he's so mentally, and then that's just depressing as shit.
Yeah,
so,
don't do that.
You know. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know where this was going. But I knew that the critics were saying, I hadn't seen any reviews of it, but I knew it was getting good reviews from the like mainstream critics and stuff like that. And I was thinking, well, you know, all I was hearing was like, you know, this is, you know, it's an unusual thing to do a sequel to this, and the way they handle it is very interesting. So I was thinking, I wonder if they will go to the point of where, you know, the grabber isn't actually going to be a real presence in this outside of like the trauma of the, you know, of the kids that were left over and, you know, something else. And maybe there's danger of the kid, you know, becoming the grabber or something like that. Mm-hmm. And have it be more of a psychological thing rooted in reality, but with like, you know, some stuff that might seem supernatural, but it could be, you know, is it the character going insane or something? And I thought, oh, either that or it has to go total, like, the grabber is real, we're building the franchise. And I wasn't sure that it would actually do that, and I was a little surprised that it did. And I think they pulled it off for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not super scary, but it was...
No.
I'm sort of mixed in the movie because there's parts of it, like some of the whenever the dialogue was, you know, like sort of like the dialogue from the last movie with the sister swearing and stuff, and sort of 80s, you know, lingo and stuff. It was making the actors sound. I'm like, what happened to these actors? I remember them being really good in the last movie. And they're very stilted at the beginning of this. But once they get past doing, you know, the dialogue, you know, just sort of the 80s dialogue, and we're acting, I was like, okay, they're really good actors. They were chewing their way through some awkward dialogue. And, yeah, the only thing that gets me about this, and this takes me back to House of a Thousand Corpses, is I really love, I'm like, oh, okay, all the dreams are going to be in Super 8. I don't think they actually filmed it in Super 8, but maybe they did, but I think it's just a filter on digital. But I liked that they, okay, we're going to make it Super 8 style. That's how you know we're in dream territory, and I liked the look of it and stuff. But then they would do this thing that I don't get, and that's there's artifacts of actual film on it. You know, you see burns on the film and stuff like that. That takes me instantly out of it. I'm like, you're just getting too stylistic with this. You know, they didn't go so far as to put scratches or dust on the film. But, you know, when they did those in little static and stuff, it's like, no, your dreams aren't gonna. If she was maybe a filmmaker or something like that, you know, and her brain worked in that and processed dreams like a movie, that would make sense. Otherwise, it was just sort of the cinematographer and editor and stuff flexing on style.
Well, that's also kind of the modern visual vocabulary, right?
Yeah.
You see that in
well,
online.
I
content
shake my
for
fist
horror,
at
and
that.
Frankly, for. Well,
yeah,
and I get it too, right?
This.
But to me, the main, I mean, to me, it kind of fit the viewer of this, because to me, this is like, okay, this is mainstream horror for the Stranger Things set, right?
Yeah.
It uses a setting, and it sort of uses a setting, but it doesn't. It has a lot of creepy, weird shit going on. It doesn't explain a lot of things up front. It deals with like nostalgia as a as a setting piece, right? But at the same time, it's kind of building its own universe. So I get it, right? I understand what you're saying. If you think about that visual style, it doesn't make a ton of sense. But you do see that a lot. So I think that's a nod to the fact that this is very much a mainstream modern, you know, yeah. going to a theater release movie, especially for a horror movie, right?
It's very much in the modern vocabulary and language, but it's its own thing at the beginning, but once we get to the camp, and I started noticing also from the beginning that I don't think they shot a single scene outside in this in the snow. I think it was on a green screen and stuff, which was a little and I was also noticing, okay, I can't see their breath whenever they're outside, and they're always in this little space. But then after a while, I thought it was kind of cool. It made it a little more stagey and dreamy.
It's atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah. And I dug how it worked. And then I was like, okay, I'm gonna take this almost a little bit like a, you know, like Dream Warriors or something. There's like once they get to the camp, there's like it's got a little of the Doctor Sleep to it, where it's kind of a weird arty film variation of, you know, like Doctor Sleep is a sequel to The Shining, but it's not. It's off at an angle, but it's got Freddy and Jason, you know, vibes to it. It's got a little bit of The Changeling in it, that George C. Scott movie with the kids in the ice and stuff. And you know, and once it's away from like dialogue and stuff like that, it's very effective, but it has that like building an 80s movie franchise to it at the end of it, you know.
That tickled me. I mean, it's not trying to be smarter than the audience or anything. It's just here's your classic 70s/80s style horror tropes. Let's run them through the mill and come up with something that's in some ways derivative, in a lot of ways evocative, but it's still like, I mean,
it's Blumhouse. It's a money grab, technically. You know, they're like, ooh,
yeah, this is well, a every good movie. Thing. Is,
how can
like,
we make this go on? But my note on
but
it.
But you know, is, you know what the I mean the thing is, and Jay, you mentioned this. You said the wrong king, right? So, you know, if this strikes me very much like something Stephen King would have written.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
It starts out kind of as one thing, and then it goes completely in a different direction where, like you say, it's about a killer grabbing kids, but now it's actually about ghosts and waking dreams and all this.
Yeah, now he's ice skating. And so it does have that sort of... end, you know?
Well, but you know what? I can't be too mad because they did set that up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Mando said, yeah, he was a good skater. You know?
My notes on this were, my like overarching note is, this movie was not lazy or overly stupid. It was like, it was a little stupid in the right ways. And
well, these two movies is, it's like, this is, if you were going to, and I know they've already done it, but if you were going to redo the Jason or Freddy series again, you'd start with, here's just the regular guy right at the beginning.
Right, yeah.
And then how does he become supernatural? And this is basically doing that. I mean, they could definitely franchise this. Like, I don't know where else you could go with it, with having it also be Ethan Hawke still be the grabber. But, I mean, you could throw that mask on another guy.
Yeah, a cheaper, you know, cheaper actor. I mean, their biggest part of the budget in this one, the budget of this movie, the majority of the budget for this went to Ethan Hawke, I would think, and to Pink Floyd for, you know, a little bit for that clip of Brick in the Wall.
But it's this kind of character, which is amazing. Like, oh, Wild Bill reached out and touched some other serial killer in another state while he was undead.
Yes,
and gave him and now he's got a mask. Like, it's you could absolutely do that. And if it keeps the level of artistic affectation that they're doing with these, where it is the, you know, where the dreams are disconcerting, well, and it's children in peril. Like, they definitely have something on their hands where, yeah, you could slash the budget, you know, another $10 million and still get the same effect.
You know how traditionally, like, kids raised by their parents, if your parents raise you lousy or raise you great or anywhere in between, usually the kids try to also, you know, improve upon the mistakes of their parents. And like, I'm going to use the good stuff from my parents and the stuff that I don't like, I'm going to raise my kids differently. That's how I feel about Blumhouse being the kids basically taking over for Roger Corman and not being, and they're like, you know, the thing about Roger Corman is was known for occasional quality, but also was known for like, let's just take a bunch of scenes from this other movie I made, slap them in between this movie that like lost the director halfway through and we'll release it, you know. Whereas Blumhouse, like, I remember when the Purge movies first came out, and I went with my friend. He's like, I've been reading about the company that made this, and I like their, you know, their style. They're only really into doing low budget stuff and seeing what they can come up with, and that way, if something's successful, it'll fund more. And then we watched The Purge, and we were like, that was a pretty good little movie. You know, it could have been better. And then The Purge 2 came out, and we're like, okay, they made some money on The Purge. And then The Purge 2 is a little better than the Purge 1. And it kind of was on an upward arc there for a while. I'm not up on all the Purge. I'm up on all the Purge movies, but like not the TV show and stuff. But like they worked on making it, you know, make sense that they're going forward with it. And There's a better chance, and if this is any, you know, indication of where they're going with it, it could still be good. Although, you know, there was a lot of legwork done in this movie, so it's never going to be as mysterious as it was in these first two movies, you know, for the audience.
No, but that goes to the franchise aspect, right, too, right?
At that point, it's
familiar. It's yes. Comfort food to the audience, yes, that they know kind of that.
Go
ahead, Chris.
If it was the 80s, I would just know the next one would be over the top. You know, it would start getting, you know, like the Freddy movies, it would have to work on some catchphrases and start doing that. But like, I have a feeling if they go on, it might have elements of that, but I have a feeling they'll keep something interesting about it going on moving forward, because they know they can still make it interesting and make it on a low budget, you know. So
yeah
the thing is that there's no Joe Hill short story here,
right
kind of thing. So they consulted with Joe Hill about this, and what he had liked the idea that, I guess, the executive, the producer, one of them had kind of pitched to him, and he's like, yeah, we can do this. And they've said that they are not going to make another one unless the story is better than the two that have come out. So they want to only go put forward something that they feel would be better. At least that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Right. So the idea is that if you have something that is a better story or more interesting or whatever it might be than these two stories, right, then they want to go forward with it. Because the one thing they don't want to do is put out one that stinks. Because you put out one that's not any good, and then you just wasted money. Because that's the whole point.
Right.
That, you know, if you can make $100 million on this, you can turn that $100 million into another movie of something else that might turn a profit.
And they're going to have to sort of split the difference also between familiarity and wanting to do something new artistically. But they seem to be very good at that. You know, they seem to be, you know, they're self-aware that, like, yes, we're a we have to make money on the one, you know, when we make money on a movie, we got to get the money for it. So, but at the same time, yeah, I'm very interested to where they, I mean, if it goes over the top into, like, you know, Evil Dead type of territory, with it, you know, and they give Ethan Hawke a chance to you know, Robert Englund it up and stuff. That could be great too, you know, depending on how they do it. So I'm
the thing that I thought while watching this is that, especially given Joe Hill's background in comics, is I 100% could see this being like IDW or somebody taking the premise coming out of this film, and now we've got, you know, Finn and Finn and Gwen dealing with this. Maybe it doesn't involve the Grabber, just answering phone calls, yeah. Right? I could see that as a point of view for it. And that's, again, that's a very Stephen King sort of thing. And again, with Hill's background in comics, I could see that as like a serialized sort of way to keep this going, whether you use that or not.
I thought the most interesting,
and make a third one, right?
Interesting, intriguing part of the movie for me was the phone, you know, the phone call time loops, you know, the phone call that makes no sense at the beginning, and then you see it from the other end, and it starts piecing together that aspect of it. Like, I don't think this was a great movie, and I didn't love it, but it was the same with the other one. But I liked it, and I'm gonna be on board because they're trying. You know, they're not just cashing in on it. They're trying to do something. It was sort of like when the first sequel to the Blair Witch Project, where it's like, how do you make a sequel to the Blair Witch Project? Come on, you know. And they tried, and they did an honest. It was interesting. Their try. It was a very flawed movie, but like I remember walking out of it going, okay, that was interesting, you know. And they put some thought into how they're, you know, that to do it in a sort of meta way, which was consistent with the movie, but it was a different kind of movie altogether. It was, but they tried, you know, and I appreciate when, you know, in a world where 99% of the time, when you get something good that you made money with, you're just going to hump it into the ground, you know, and just keep doing it over and over, yeah, and over again.
I mean, you know, it's weird because the last modern movie we did was Weapons, right?
Uh-huh.
So taking, and I'm going to disregard the fact that we very recently did Sinners, which apparently is now the new darling that everybody loves, if the Academy nominations are any indication and so forth. But looking at just like Black Phone 2 and Weapons, I would much rather have more films like Black Phone 2, which... No, they're a Blumhouse picture. They're designed to be, you know, to make money and to deliver some scares and entertain the audience. I would much rather watch more films like that than, you know, self-important, aggrandized auteur trash,
yeah,
like Weapons, because Weapons actively pissed me off. Whereas yeah, Black Phone 2 legitimately entertained me. Right, I'm not saying pissed me off as in I was engaged as a viewer. I was angry that I wasted 2 hours of my life watching it. I enjoyed Black Phone 2. It didn't do a lot of things that were super creative or blew my mind, but I was entertained as a horror movie fan, and it's like it made me want to go back and rewatch the first one because I enjoyed the second mm-hmm. one. So it's like I would much rather have that, and rather than, you know, make these movies that, yeah, okay, They'll do all right with the critics. They'll do all right with the box office. They're not going to be, you know, raking in awards and people, you know, ranting and raving about it on YouTube videos and crap. But at the same time, it's like I don't need somebody trying to tell me what horror is and reinvent a genre that's been working for decades.
Yeah, the Black Phone is playing to horror fans. You know, people who are, you know, versed on their horror stuff, so you can surprise people in a different way. Whereas stuff like Weapons, and to an even greater extent, whatchamacallit there, old Saw Your Head Off movie. They're playing
Hereditary.
They're playing to a mainstream audience that's dipping their toes into terror, so it's easier to surprise them. And so, you know, so when the horror fans come into those kind of movies, you know, it's like, okay, I see what's going on here. And even if they put a twist in it, though, it's still always got that, like, but I'm not, you know, I'm like, you know, Hereditary is like, I'm a good horror movie because I'm a super art film, you know, horror movie. And Weapons was like, I'm a horror movie, but I'm not really. I'm more sort of a social comedy, something else, you know. So that you can, you know, with both of them, it gives that mainstream audience like, I don't usually like horror movies, but this one had, you know, extra social value to it that, or it, you know, or was extremely well set design, you know, or something like that, and it gives them something,
yeah,
to say they like it without it saying them, I love the part where they sawed their head off, you know, and that's the thing is. Yeah. They did love the part where they sawed their head off, but it gives them an out to not discuss that part of their enjoyment of the movie. If you want to get psychological,
yeah, well, and you have right when you have, you know, filmmakers, the Blumhouse. I mean, again, not every Blumhouse movie. We've covered some bad ones right?
Blumhouse has bad movies for sure, but that's how
absolutely. But to me, the beast. But to me, they're you mentioned Roger Corman. They're sincere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, God bless their bad movies. They're sincere about it.
Whereas movies like, right, but movies like Weapons are made like, well, you know, horror movies are all trash, right? You know, but I'm going to make one anyway because I'm just so smart.
I'm going to put something extra and it's in like it to elevate this from regular
horror. Oh my God, if I hear elevated horror again, the only elevated horror I want is that movie The Lift. Remember that one about the killer elevator?
No, elevated horror has got to be like the movie where those ladies climb the pole thing and they get stuck up there.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, Pole Sitter. Yeah, I remember
not
that one.
Not Pole Sitter.
Wasn't Crow T. Robot in that one?
I can't remember. God damn it. I'll find it.
It's funny that you say Pole Sitters because I had a... it's a combination of my college and the band I was in. And when we would play the college that I used to go to at RIT, we would play this at the beginning of the year. They would set you up at a big stage, and the fraternities always had a pole sitting thing at the charity fund where it's like you sit at the top of the pole. It's, you know, it's like a race, but however long you sit at the top of the pole,
like
you
the
raise money.
So basically, you went to school in the 1920s.
Yes, it's probably a tradition from the 1920s, but since we're
did you also swallow goldfish and cram yourself into phone booths?
Entered the modern age, the top of the pole, you know, the pole was very, you know, had a ladder up it, you know, you didn't have to climb the pole, and when they got up there, they were bringing them up food, and they were, you know, listening to music and watching bands and stuff. So I would just you goddamn pole sitters, back in my day, my mother was a pole sitter. And you know what she did?
She had to shimmy.
Oh, I knew what I was saying. She had to shimmy up that pole all by herself. No food, no water. She had to pee in a bucket. You guys pee in a bucket? No, you take breaks, don't you? And go down into the nice little bathroom with a janitor to clean it, you stinking pole sitters. And it became a year-to-year thing of just like, you know, where I would just like mount the stage and just be like, pole sitters, my arms up in the air.
That's amazing.
I'm sorry. This is a tangent to a tangent, but my good friend Bob Hansen on our show, my good friend Bob Hansen, shout out at Bob Hansen Jokes on your socials, including on YouTube. Released a video where he was talking about, he was doing the walk and talk, right? Because it's important when a white guy does the walk and talk on YouTube, you know? And he said that he called him, referred to himself as a red blooded American dick pisser. Mm. He goes, my father was a dick pisser. His father before him was a dick pisser. And I can say I did know Bob Hansen's father. He was a red blooded American dick pisser. And, you know, so. All you guys out there, you dads, remember, raise your sons as red-blooded American dick pissers. That's what this country...
All these kids pissing out their ass these days.
Yeah. They don't know. They don't know what's going on.
What do you know about dick pissing? Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay, let's get this train back on track.
All right.
So,
Black Phone 2.
Yeah. So anyway, so the thing is, like they said, this if there's going to be a Black Phone 3, then the Joe Hill had said that he really wanted to make sure it was something worth making. The same thing that Scott Derrickson wants to come back again. Ethan Hawke has said that he definitely would come back again. You know, why not? Because, again, you're payday and you're making money, and everyone's very happy. When you're getting paid and making money, it happens. So, you know, honestly, I mean, again, I understand we should talk about that. I probably would not want to see Black Phone 3. I mean, not that I enjoyed both of them, but I'm just worried that I'm going to stop enjoying the next one. I'm not going to enjoy the next one.
I'm going to watch it out of curiosity, even though, like, not going to be on fire to see it. I'm going to be curious to see.
I'm just saying, it's one of those things that as the you know, you just can only roll the dice so many times. You know what I'm saying? So, and if it's the same story as this one, where it's like, you know, I can't be the same story again. You know, it could be. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It basically could just turn into Freddy Krueger chasing around the brother and sister. You know. From
this point, I already got a hook for you. You move it up another 4 years, they're both in college on either side of the country.
Oh. Yeah.
There you go.
Well,
look at that. Boom.
You guys at Blumhouse, if you're listening.
Yeah, well, that's...
Send Hero his check.
That's the thing. They could just wait a few years in between, and they can give the movie, you know... The last movie had the 70s feel, and this one had the 80s feel. They can move into the 90s, you know, for college, or, you know, the feel of the 90s for it.
And then you do your legacy sequel, where Gwen and Finn are growing up, and it's about their kids.
There's I hope they don't do it, but you can. There's always prequels, you know. There's obviously, the grabber was a personality because he was all over the place. You know, he was a talented ice skater at a camp, at a summer camp. He gets around, you know. So who knows what he was doing before that? He's sort of getting a little bit of the Nicolas Cage and Long Legs thing of where, you know, he's kind of like this like long haired hippie guy. Or more like glam guy.
Yeah,
who's just.
I'd say it's like that does not describe Nicolas Cage in Long Legs.
No, I'm saying the Nicolas Cage 5-10 years before Long Legs. You know, like
just saying because Nicolas Cage in Long Legs. Nope, would not call him a hippie. You know,
no,
kind of thing.
No. Well. He was.
I wouldn't call anybody that ice skates a hippie either. I mean, plays hockey a hippie.
Going to Grateful Dead shows, you'd be surprised how many hippies are there. I mean, you got Charles Manson was not. You know, he was an outlier.
Was not a hippie.
He was. But there's plenty of hippies that go down the dark side of whatever it is. It could be mental illness. It could be drug addiction. It could be both. It could be their psychopath. There's psychopath hippies and stuff. I just remember like having a very idealized idea of like hippies, like, hey man, blah, 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 you know, growing up. And then when I started meeting like real hippies who'd, you know, never aged out of being a hippie. There were some Nicolas Cages in there. You know, there were some people just like, you know, they were just like they had their Charles Manson handbook and were, you know, they're like they saw the Charles Manson story. They said, you know,
that's what I want to emulate.
I want that. Yeah. Girls.
That's what I want.
Girls and killing. It sounds good. What? They'll bring me food and
riding
sex.
On slides at the playground. You got to watch out for TV, Lois. I hear that Manson guy watches it all day.
Yeah.
It's new to me.
Then you got to just make sure you
avoid. If I haven't seen it, it's new to me.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, I said I dug this movie. I watched it earlier today before the recording. I dug it. I said it went in different directions. I liked it visually. So I'm down with it. It gets my full endorsement. I enjoyed it.
I was thinking I wasn't going to like it in the first half hour, and then it just like sucked me into the mood of it. It's at the atmosphere and the choices that they made. It was just like, yeah, this is very. It was almost 2 hours long, and I'm like, okay, this seems kind of long. And I also have a theory that I think it might have been a longer movie. I think there might have been more lore and more to it, and they were like, we got to make this under 2 hours. You know, we can't have this be 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 15 minutes. Because there's stuff like she just shows up with the flyer to the camp and tosses it down, and, you know, it's like, and I'm looking at that going, did she just find that in the house or what? You know, there was no explanation as to where it came from. And I could almost just see the scene where she finds it somewhere and then brings it to him. And they were like, yeah, we can lose that. And there were other things that like were set up that never came back. Like they were obviously setting up something with those tarot cards that he gave her. There were very 90s, early 2000s looking Photoshop printed tarot cards.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, okay. Because we had, you know, other things set up and knocked down. And that was totally, and it wasn't the kind of thing that it's like, oh, they're setting up a, you know, a little trick, a dead end or anything, because it wasn't that important. But it just seemed like it was like they made a point to show them and to, you know, I gave these to you. So I'm like, okay, this is going to factor in. I think there might have been a little more in there with, and I wish there had been more in there of, what was her name, Dakota, the daughter?
Mustang.
The Mustang, the cowboy girl.
I wish there was more Mustang too.
Yeah, Mustang is super hot and seemed like a very interesting character. You know, she was like a character from another movie, brought in there just like, howdy boys, let's go.
Well, she almost seems like, it's almost like when you read a novel by an author who's written a bunch of different books.
Yeah,
and a character
shows up
way too developed for because she's the sheriff for the further adventures, takes place
further down the line or something. But she looked
right.
Like she
was, it's like if
she was right out of a Gene Autry movie. She was, you know, she had that like the way she moved around was that like very 40s, like I'm a spunky cowgirl and I'll kick anybody's ass and stuff. And you know, there was obviously like setting up romance with her and the brother and stuff, but I feel there was more fleshing out and more lore, and they had to trim it down to get it into a, and as it is, it does not overstay its welcome, even though it is like, with a movie like this, it might have been 15 or 20 minutes too long, but I never got bored for a second.
I wasn't bored either.
Yeah.
No.
Just.
No, it gets a recommendation.
Just bring back Mustang. I mean, there's got to be people that when they're doing audience things, just people going like, more Mustang, please.
Yeah, me. Yeah. More Mustang.
Just do a side movie about Mustang, you know?
Well, that's what I mean, right? That you do now. You do the novella, right? The spinoff, the further adventures of Mustang. You know,
it would be fun if it was a straight up western.
yeah,
no, nothing supernatural, any of that shit. It's like cattle rustlers.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't take kindly to rustlers in my town, boys.
Was there a lot of cattle rustling back in the '80s? I'm just.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, out west, you know. I mean, we didn't really see it back east.
Not in the northeast.
Yeah, we don't see it back up here. Just saying.
Back east.
I wonder if there even is cattle rustling. There can't be any cattle rustling.
I'm sure there is.
Absolutely, oh, 100% there's cattle rustling.
As long as there's outlaws.
Just like there's not just video piracy. There's still actual high seas piracy.
Yeah, right. There's just still not cattle as much of a because, thing.
Right, but you still, but I mean, cattle herds are still branded, right? And they're still, you know, they're still stolen, right? Because you sell heads of cattle to make money. I mean, I don't know that they're having like, you know, open conflict like the cut wire wars and stuff.
I mean, you
in
can chip
century,
cattle but, now, though. That's the thing.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, but that's expensive.
It's very expensive.
Yeah, that's
to ship
true.
Cattle.
That's true.
Just saying.
You know, chipped cattle.
Fresh burger meat.
Chipped cattle.
Chipped beef.
Chipped cattle on toast points, right?
Walking chipped burgers. I
broke my teeth on this.
I'm sorry. Chipped beef. You know what, Jay? Chipped beef makes me think of the one cow, the genetically modified cow from Ferdinand.
Yes.
Who's like a robot.
Yes.
Oh, God. Why is there a blinking light in my chipped beef on my shit?
That's how you know it's good.
Well, why is my shit on the shingle blinking right now? Do they still? God damn it! I'll bet you they don't serve the kids shit on a shingle anymore.
Oh, you can get
no,
chipped
they
on
don't.
Toast.
They definitely don't.
Can we make that our movement out of all the things to have a movement about? Can we make
if
that
if I have chipped beef on toast, I will have a movement.
Where we just show up outside
movement.
Yeah,
Show up out of school at schools at the school board meetings just going like, I found out my daughter doesn't even know what shit on a shingle is. and I will not rest.
You
until
call yourself
a fat lady
educator.
Is splatting shit on a shingle on a piece of
I thought this was America.
Yeah. What country have I woken up in?
And you call yourself educated?
Yes.
We used to have a society.
I will say this. Okay, down here, okay, the southern equivalent to shit on a shingle is biscuits and gravy, and we still do have biscuits and gravy, and I'm pretty sure they do serve it in the schools too.
If we ever lose biscuits and gravy, we really are dead as a society, because nothing says breakfast or lunch or dinner like really, really wet flour on top of really, really dry flour.
Yeah,
dry flour.
All the
grays and
browns
and then throw a bunch of pork
and
fat in it
too.
Yeah,
that's what makes it good.
All I say is take a picture of the average American and you'll know that we're never going to give up our biscuits and gravy. Never.
That just makes me want to listen to that Jimmy Dean sausage complaint from like 20 years ago.
Clogged hands.
Now we're coming right back to biscuit basket. That's our theme is just like
food.
Shit out of shingle and biscuits and gravy.
We were talking about biscuit basket at dinner. I had to explain it to my daughter's boyfriend.
Can we rate movies like that? If it's bad, it's shit on a shingle. But if it's good, it's biscuits and gravy.
It's biscuit and gravy.
B&G.
You know, and it can be.
I don't know.
Watch out, is it Jaws?
That's right.
We got the.
It's like. Fuck that is
we got the breakfast.
Stuff.
We could have a number system of 1 to 5 where it's like, you know, the worst movie is 5 shits on a shingle and the best movie is 5 biscuits and gravy.
Oh my God, that sounds so good. Right
yeah,
now.
It does.
And it's see, if I was going to do that, though, I've got to say my 5-star would be Full English, right?
Oh, the old
Raging
Full English.
From shit on a shingle to Full English.
Full Irish, both good.
I usually make my own gravy, but I
gravy always tastes good.
Well, we just add,
like,
wait a minute, Chris.
Just like Chuck Wagon.
We just add water to you and you make your own gravy? Like the dog food?
I make my own gravy in the shower.
But I just discovered that you can get cans of gravy at the grocery store now, and it's just like...
Yeah.
Oh,
I think you've been able to get cans of gravy for about 60 years.
I've always just thought of gravy as something that you make.
And the best gravy
that you make. But at the same time, I'm like, I can have quick gravy.
Does this come when you cook the meat? You have to make gravy.
You literally get the biscuits out of the tube, and you get the gravy out of a can, and then if you need the Jimmy Dean sausage or whatever your favorite brand is, Jimmy Dean, if you want to sponsor me, I love your sausage with sage.
Oh.
You can send it my way.
Jimmy Dean breakfast sausages.
So I will say, you want to get really American. You don't even get the canned. You get the powdered gravy, powdered sausage gravy.
Yeah, good.
Right.
Yeah, good gravy. Thank you. It's just brown in a bag.
Brown in a bag.
Oh no!
Who has brown sausage?
That's a real thing. When I work,
sausage gravy's not brown, Chris. It's white.
It's white.
Oh no! There's brown. There's brown and there's
not
white
sausage gravy.
Oh, not sausage gravy. No.
No, no. If you're doing biscuits and gravy, that's
right. You're talking about like turkey gravy, not turkey gravy. Yeah. beef gravy
or turkey gravy is actually brown gravy. And pork gravy.
When you have biscuits and gravy, brown gravy, that's like the day after Thanksgiving.
But that's
breakfast on Black Friday.
We used to get boxes of bags of white and bags of brown, and the bags of white you used for white gravy. And used for cream soups. If you want to make cream of broccoli, it was.
Here's another newsflash: they have cream soups in cans now too. Cream of celery, cream of chicken, cream of mushroom, cream of broccoli.
The thing is, I have to make cream soups myself because I make the best cream soups. They're artery
in the shower
cloggers, but they are delicious.
Look at this bougie bitch. He's made. I make the best cream soups.
White wine. You gotta have that cream cheese in there too.
That's the secret. If you really need a white sauce real fast, cream cheese.
And Chris will sell it to you too with a grilled cheese for $32 out of a food truck, and it'll cost 40 minutes to make it.
Never.
But it's really worth it.
Never.
The only acceptable soup for grilled cheese is tomato.
Sir, I dispute you now. If I ever had a food truck, I could not do that to human beings that need food. No, I would.
If I was 18 years old, I would be in a food truck, man. I would be slinging breakfast sandwiches until 1 o'clock every day, and that would be it. I'd be done at one, prep for the next day.
It's just sad that we've gone from you used to be able to just about anywhere in this country, go to a taco truck, and get fucking amazing tacos, like that for nothing.
Yeah, for
now you get like shit tacos and it takes forever and you got to pay with a credit card because they want a tip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's right? The thing. If I've walked up to you, you're not getting a tip.
They figured out what fancy tacos are, which are basically regular like tacos how they really have them in Mexico. Americans found that out and were like, "Oh, and tacos like that are amazing." But now they've become so, it's America, they've become so absorbed into our culture that now everybody knows how to make those tacos, and then now they just make them shitty. So you get them with just like a few crumbs of meat on it, you know, little crumble cheese on top of it. And it's like, okay, that's good. But
that's some bullshit. You come over to Hanover, Massachusetts when it's Taco Tuesday. You're getting better than White Boy Taco Night. I'll make you good tacos.
Right. The Mexican food.
I worked with a guy. I was gonna say I worked with a guy. He said he was from Costa Rica, right? He said you go to a taco truck, and if the guy that takes your order, okay, the only English they should be saying is "What do you have?" and "Enjoy." And if it's anything else, walk away. Right, that's it. What do you have?
Yep. Enjoy. Remember that place we went to in Atlantic City, Hero? That was that place in Atlantic City.
The place with the really suspect seafood?
It was a hole in the wall Mexican couple pressing out the tortillas and throwing them on the flat top.
Oh yeah.
And your tortilla was
was there just doing something.
Just like maybe
Chris
Huskin,
even said when we left, like he wanted to stay. He just wanted to stay and live with them.
I wanted to learn all their secrets.
We had a taqueria like that in the metropolis of Decatur, Alabama, right? It was called El Taqueria, right?
Which means it was good.
El Taqueria. But because you go in there and Mama is working the front cash, right? And, Abuela is the one cooking in the back. And Abuelo, he's the guy running all the grills in the front, which are made of the oil drums cut in half.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and there's a couple kids doing some busy work, too.
Was watching Sesame Street in Spanish.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, this is a fucking family affair. I love it. They had the best. I looked forward to going to El Taqueria.
Hey, uh-huh. I lived down the street from a place called Yucatan Tacos, and their sign was Mexican food made by real Mexicans, and it was great.
Yeah, and it's the same with like Thai food and stuff like that. You know?
Oh God, I got a great Thai place within spitting distance of my house now. Oh my God,
we got a Vietnamese place right by work that Adam put me onto. Pho Nudeville. Shout out to Pho Nudeville. If you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, go see Allie at Pho Nudeville. She'll take care of you.
Oh my gosh. Some pho.
Yeah, no, a good authentic pho place is so good because it's so fresh and, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's literally, they just, like, cook it and 2 minutes later, there it is, steaming on your plate. It's,
oh, yeah. If you got a hot pot place near you, go for it, man. Change your fucking life.
But what can we get from this episode of Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terrors is we're hungry guys.
We're hungry for horror and we're hungry
lean
for tacos.
Lean and hungry types. I don't know about the lean, but certainly the hungry types.
Yeah. I'm getting lean.
To the left sometimes. Then I get my back.
Only one part of me leans to the left.
I just think of the great Laszlo Toth and his saying was lean to the left, lean to the right, stand up, sit down, fight.
Yeah, well, the problem is that some of us are so old that depending on what we did that day, you lean to favoring what you happened. When you literally go to stand up, you're like, all I did was drive home, and all of a sudden my hamstring is now killing me. What did I do? Nothing.
Yeah. And well, now it's stand up, it's sit down, stand up, or it's stand up, sit down, don't get up.
Yeah,
stop standing up.
I've fallen and I won't get up.
Yes.
Oh my God! Now there's a T-shirt. I've fallen and I won't get up.
And I won't get up. I refuse to get up, man.
That is a zeitgeist.
You can't make me.
I like that one. I saw a shirt the other day. My wife and I were shopping. We came out of Walmart, and of course this was at Walmart, when there's a young woman walking in, and her shirt says, I'm a handful, but so is this ass.
That, oh, man, I'd be following her.
And I said, she said, nope.
I would be following her around. I would want the T-shirt that says I shaved my balls for this.
Yes, I shaved my balls for this.
What was the other day? Kelly and I said, it was at work. I said, man, this is a perfect time. I was talking to my buddy Tyler. I said, man, you know, you do this and you're like, you know, it's like, think of the T-shirt says, I shaved my balls for this. And Tyler used to be my student. So he's just shaking his head because he's not been a teacher like 6 years. He's like, oh, God, Jay. And I'm like, hey, man, if you can't laugh at work, when else can you laugh? Because this place will fucking kill you. So, anyway.
All right, considering we've been talking about tacos for a half an hour now, is there anything else we have to add to the Black Phone 2 discussion?
Go on to the Peacock. Yeah, go on to the Peacock and watch Black Phone 2. Only thing I will say, maybe if you haven't seen the first one in a while, give it a rewatch first. But other than that, go enjoy yourself on the cock.
It's not.
And then go on YouTube and look up Ani Tex if you want to get some good Mexican recipes and techniques. I got his cookbook for Christmas.
Pick up the Black Phone and call your local Mexican place.
Yes.
And then when they say, hey, what do you have?
Enjoy.
Then you know you're at the right place.
Yep.
Yeah, you call them up and they keep picking up the phone and going, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Hanging up on you.
There we go. We're out.
Good God. Good.
Well, that was an interesting episode.
Pick up that telephone. visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Spock sabotaged the system.